Imagine being like the biggest pop group on the planet, breaking literally every global record, but then being told by the most prestigious music academy that, well, you have to compete in a separate lane just because of the language you sing in.
Right. It's a massive friction point right now. You've got this incredibly dynamic industry pushing worldwide boundaries, and it's colliding straight into these very rigid Western structures.
Exactly. So welcome to your daily briefing from Seoul. Today, we're taking a deep dive into how Korean entertainment is basically navigating three very different systems to, secure its global footprint.
Yeah, we're looking at ground-up structural pivots, rewriting global award rules, and
Yeah.
pretty much everything in between.
It really is an industry in constant motion. Which brings us to our first story momentum. Specifically, the boy group, The Wind. They just dropped their new mini album on July 29th, 2026.
Right, Second Wind, asked Jazzy earlier.
Yeah, that one. But what really caught my eye isn't just the music itself, it's the sheer mechanics behind it. They're basically relaunching the entire enterprise just to get back in the game.
Well, they really had to, honestly. I mean, they're
That's
coming off a nearly 2-year gap between physical releases.
Which is an absolute eternity in K-pop time.
Right. A 21-month hiatus. That usually means your audience has already aged out or, just moved on to the next rookie group.
It feels way less like a traditional album drop and more like a startup pulling off this massive strategic pivot just to avoid going under.
Yeah, total rebuild.
Especially since they're pressing forward down a member. Kim Hee-soo is out on health leave right now. Plus, they've inked a brand new partnership with P-Pang Star Entertainment to actually manage this release.
And look at how they're signaling this whole rebuild to the industry.
Yeah.
They didn't just toss out a generic single. They brought in Park Kyung from Block B to produce the record.
Oh, wow, really? That's a huge name.
Exactly. It's a highly calculated move. You anchor this risky, revamped group with a very familiar, trusted industry name. It basically tells fans, hey, the machinery is running smoothly again.
Okay, so agencies are fundamentally restructuring just to survive domestically. But on the flip side, production companies are ripping up the whole blueprint for international shows.
Oh, definitely.
Take this upcoming Disney Plus show hitting globally in October 2026, Marry, Bury, Love.
What's fascinating about this one is how it completely bypasses the traditional export model.
Right, like usually a Korean studio makes a hit and just sells the tape overseas, right?
Exactly. But this is a ground-up joint production. It's built right from the start by Korea's CJ ENM and Japan's Nippon TV.
And they baked that cross-cultural element directly into the casting from day one. You've got Ji Chang-wook playing a Korean spatial designer.
Relocating to a Japanese island, yeah.
Right, and acting opposite Amada Mio, who plays a Japanese strawberry farmer. But how does that actually work in practice? If you merge two very distinct markets into the DNA of a show, doesn't that fundamentally alter the storytelling?
It absolutely changes the formula. I mean, Japanese dramas often lean into this slow burn, slice of life pacing.
While K-dramas are, famous for those huge, high-stakes, emotional cliffhangers.
Right. So when you co-produce for both local and global streaming from the very first script draft, you aren't just translating dialogue anymore.
You're building something totally new.
Exactly. You are literally engineering a hybrid narrative.
Yeah.
It has to balance both audience expectations at the exact same time.
Which brings us right back to that collision we mentioned earlier. Like, CJ ENM is building a new global stage from scratch, but when K-pop artists try to step onto established Western stages.
The doors are newly gated, yeah.
Right. Case in point, BTS just announced they are not submitting music for the 2027 Grammys.
Which is a massive statement.
Yeah.
All seven members objected to the idea of dividing music by region or language.
This is a direct response to the Recording Academy's new category, right? The one taking effect for the 69th Grammys.
Yes, the best Asian pop music performance category.
The guardrails on this are just wild to me. To even qualify, a song strictly requires the, quote, meaningful use of an Asian language.
Right, meaning if you are a K-pop group, but you release a massive global hit entirely in English.
You're immediately disqualified from this specific Asian pop category. Like, if you're a listener, you probably don't care what language the lyrics are in, you just care if the song's good. Why is the Academy building this wall?
Well, the Academy's CEO, Harvey Mason Jr., defended the move. He argued that the general field categories like song or album of the year are still completely open to these artists.
Okay, so they claim they're creating a dedicated space to honor Asian pop.
That's the official stance, yeah.
I mean, I have to push back on that framework. Is it really a spotlight, or is it just an isolated lane designed to keep these massive global hits separated from the main fields?
And that is exactly the tension right now.
Ugh.
Artists are demanding to be evaluated on a universal scale.
Right. It feels like they're trying to put a border around something that has already transcended borders.
They don't want to be regionalized when their cultural and commercial impact is just undeniably global.
It really shows how every facet of Korean entertainment is being tested right now. You've got agencies managing grueling comeback cycles, studios innovating cross-border productions, and artists directly challenging rigid global award rules.
The one constant here is that the industry absolutely refuses to stay static. I mean, it adapts or it builds a new road entirely.
Which leaves you with a pretty massive question to ponder today. If the biggest global artists start opting out of traditional Western institutions over how they are classified, will those institutions be forced to adapt their rules, or will artists simply bypass them entirely and build their own definitive global stages?